Blog Talk Radio.
Spectral technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
What's going on? You're here live on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show. I'm your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the cohort True Calling Sports. Catch boxing articles and more at thechtonsports.com. Once again, thechtonsports.com. But right now, you are in the boxing realm. If you want to talk boxing, you can dial in at 347-237-5539. Once again, that's 347-237-5539. Press one key, get on cue, and be able to talk live on the show. I'm trying to see if I'm pretty much like taking this thing a little bit mobile right now. As some of the followers of this show and the page know, I've been, you know, very busy over the past, not just the past weekend, but the past month, with a lot of traveling. So, you know, just winding down here, reference to all of that. Just wanted to get into some boxing talk this weekend, as there was a lot to cover over the course of the week, not just with what was happening inside the ring on Saturday night, and also on other days, but also outside of the ring. So we're going to, you know, try our best to cover all of that here on this 1 hour live segment of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Just want to, you know, break down what happened over at the Barclays Center bit by bit first. And then after that, go into what happened in Philadelphia, as there was, you know, big news there in reference to the main event in Philadelphia while the card at Barclays Center was going on. And, of course, the commentary or comments that have been going back and forth in reference to two specific heavyweights. So we're going to be going through all of that here today. So bear with me on that. But like I was saying, first I wanted to, you know, get into, you know, what was happening over at the Barclays Center, as, you know, the host here was, you know, basically there, you know, basically you had the card by Matchroom Boxing and Matchroom Sports. This time, you have, you know, the first card from Matchroom Boxing over at the Barclays Center. They did have something over in, I think it was Uniondale, in November 11th of 2017. So now we have this second fight card, of course, with two signees that Eddie Hearn had, including middleweight Daniel Jacobs, former WBA regular middleweight champion of the world, and Jarrell Big Baby Miller, the heavyweight that's out there that was, you know, undefeated. So you had those two fighters there, Miller in the co-feature, and Daniel Jacobs in the main event. So you pretty much had those two fights and more. But, you know, I wanted to you know, break down a couple of things that happened at the Barclays Center, as, you know, I was specifically part of the media out there covering the press conference, covering the weigh-in, and then, of course, covering the fight. You could catch those highlights, if you haven't, on the Boxing Source Facebook page, or if you go through the YouTube channel and look up the Boxing Source. So you'll be able to see a few things with that. And if you can, go to @BoxingSource2 on Twitter and follow that page, so you'll be able to get some boxing updates and some insights on what's happening within the boxing world. But back into what's happening, what happened over the weekend there at the Barclays Center. You had the press conference there that was on the Mondrian Park Avenue. Didn't really, you know, expect a press conference to be in that particular venue. And I think a lot of media folks are, like, thrown off by that. So the thing about that was, if you were, like, a photographer or, you know, somebody that wanted to cover video, if you didn't get in there early, you would have been out of luck. And that pretty much was your host here, as, you know, he got in there pretty much about 30 to 45 minutes late to the press conference. You know, while they had the undercard fighters and trainers out there, you know, including Julian Sosa, Larry Ventus, Daniel Nusloff, Noah Kidd, and also that women's lightweight championship, those two champions at the time, Katie Taylor and Victoria Noelia Bustos. But, you know, going from that and then over to the weigh-in was just chaos because of what happened at the Barclays Center the previous weekend, with the whole, you know, the whole thing with Adrian Broner and Tekashi 6ix9ine. So that whole thing was kind of a big setback to a lot of people there, specifically the media members, as it took so long for those media members to get inside before the weigh-in actually took place. And then when the weigh-in was over, they didn't even give us but, you know, 30 minutes to get on up out of there. So that was, you know, kind of a sticky situation. But, you know, being out there at the, you know, the media area for Barclays, you know, it was pretty good. You know, he had everything ready, you know, Wi-Fi ready, charging station. So, you know, I was able to, you know, do everything that I wanted to do there at the time there for these fights. But getting into those things there, I wanted to break down actually four fights on that particular card. One of them was the pro debut of the young prospect, and I wouldn't necessarily say phenom, but you know, some people were, you know, looking forward to see him. What he could do there in his pro debut, and that is Daniyar Ilusinov. For those that follow the amateurs, he did compete under Kazakhstan in the Olympic Games in 2012 and 2016, and he was able to win the gold medal in 2016, and was a you know, amateur world champion in 2013, and got a couple of gold medals in the Asian Games as well. So he had been, you know, fairly decorated in the sport. You know, going up, you know, in his debut against Noah Kidd, who was three wins, zero losses, and one draw, but, you know, he was, you know, somebody that they were trying to put out there to see where, you know, Snuff would be at in his pro debut. And, you know, in the first round, he pretty much had, like, a filling out process out there. And I wouldn't necessarily say he was tentative, but he wasn't, like, you know, very aggressive at first against Noah Kidd. But there were times when he was, you know, able to pull off a few counter punches that really affected Noah Kidd. And then that kind of, like, led to Yeluzhnov having an advantage early in the fight. He was able to score a knockdown. And then after that particular knockdown that he had, he was able to eventually finish off Noah Kidd in his first professional fight. Got the TKO victory in round three there. So he got, like I was saying, his first professional victory. You're going to see where he's going to be, you know, placed. I mean, as you know that, you know, back in March, Eddie Hearn was a guy that, you know, ended up signing Yeluzhnov. So we're going to be seeing Donayar in the near future in these matchroom boxing cards there. So you'll probably see him probably fighting in another, what, 6 weeks or 2 months in another matchroom boxing card. Of course, you know, we have the big feature in a matchroom boxing next week, as you have the rematch of David Haye versus Tony Bellew. So that's one fight card to be looking forward to here next week, especially since, you know, a lot of fights have kind of fell by the wayside on this week of Cinco de Mayo. So that's something here to look into or look forward to. But like I was saying there with the third round TKO win by Donayar Yeluzhnov, that's going to be, you know, one fighter to look to under Matchroom Sports there. So wanted to cover that first. And then the next fight that was, you know, part of the undercard, the last fight that was actually on the undercard there for Barclays Center was the lightweight or women's lightweight unification match between the WBA champion Katie Taylor and the IBF champion Victoria Noelia Bustos. Few people were anticipating this particular matchup. Of course, you know, Katie Taylor is from Ireland and has, like, you know, very, very deep background there. Of course, she also was part of the Olympic Games, was the, you know, representative there. excuse me. You know, was a representative there for the, you know, the 2012 Olympic Games there in Ireland, and was able to win the gold medal. And, you know, within just a few fights professionally, she was able to win the WBA championship. And that was, you know, in her seventh professional fight, you know, back on October 28th. I think that was, you know, part of the Anthony Joshua card against Carlos Takam. So you had that going on there. She was part of that undercard. Then she was able to defend it against Jessica McCaskill in December 2017, and then had this unification match against Victoria Noelia Bustos, who, of course, came in there. She was, you know, 18-4, but was the, you know, IBF female lightweight champion, and had defended it you know, a couple of times in 2017 before facing Gady Taylor. So this is like a very, very big match there in the sport of women's boxing. And you had like a few notable boxers that were, you know, on hand or in attendance during that weekend for this particular fight, including, you know, champion Clarissa Shields that was, you know, on hand in New York City to, you know, basically show her support. But you had, you know, this fight between these two, Gady Taylor. In this particular matchup, I would say that Gady Taylor was the one that, you know, pretty much like outboxed Noelia Bustos, or Victoria Bustos, excuse me. You know, was able to get off whatever she needed to do in that particular fight, was able to get the better of multiple exchanges that they had. And, you know, that led to, you know, more success there throughout the round. You know, I didn't necessarily see Victoria Bustos taking many chances out there in this fight against Gady Taylor. I'm not sure if she was, like, you know, looking for a counter punch or, you know, something from Gady Taylor that would, you know, really put Bustos in trouble. It wasn't like, you know, Gady Taylor had something to, you know, really hurt Victoria Bustos, but, you know, there I just really didn't see Bustos really taking that many chances until late in the fight. If you know, if there was like any type of stream that you were able to see this particular fight in, then you would see that, you know, Bustos seemed very tentative in this particular matchup. Didn't really want to, you know, take that many chances out there until like the seventh or eighth round, where she kind of like threw caution to the wind in a sense. And, you know, by doing that, she was able to get into more exchanges with Gady Taylor. And if y'all saw the last two rounds between those two, that was a very, very, very good back and forth phone booth type of brawl between those two that, you know, brought a rousing ovation from the crowd. And that was there at the Barclays Center. But, you know, even with that, the fight went to the scorecards. And, you know, it was basically a unanimous decision victory for Gady Taylor. And she was able to, you know, retain that WBA lightweight championship that she had, and also gained the IBF championship that Victoria Bustos has. So she is a unified champion with just 9 professional fights on her record there. And, you know, the reception that she got there in this particular match shows that she, you know, could be one of the biggest stars in the sport, you know, regardless of, you know, whether it's, you know, male, female, or whatever. She would be able to get the overall popularity that is needed in order to, you know, bring success or bring in a lot of you know, a lot of to the seats. So that's something that she is going to be able to build on in the near future. I would say that as long as, you know, Eddie Hearn kind of like brings her along fairly well, then she shouldn't really, you know, have that many issues as far as getting people to come over to see her fight. I think her next fight will be, you know, likely either in Ireland. If it's not next, it'll be very soon. And if it, and once again, if it's not next, it'll be in the UK. So, you know, people, Irish fans, will be able to, you know, sit in and be able to take part and cheer Katie Taylor on. So, you know, once again, you have Katie Taylor there now, 9-0 as the WBA and IBF lightweight champion. Just getting into it here, 20 minutes into the show. If you want to participate, call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue. Live on the show. Just wanted to continue on here with that fight card that was at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Of course, you had the HBO telecast starting at about 10 p.m. Eastern time. You know, and with that, what you had was the co-feature bout with heavyweight as Johan Duopai, former heavyweight title contender, challenger, taking on Jarrell Big Baby Miller, Brooklynite, you know, somebody that, you know, wanted to have a fight there at the Barclays Center in front of a hometown crowd. So he was able to, you know, have that happen there in this HBO telecast. And this was like a people kind of like tried to make this like a barometer type of a fight. This was labeled as a WBA title eliminator. You know, even with, you know, you have Alexander Povetkin as the number one contender for the WBA super title. It seems like this was a eliminator for the WBA regular title. And so you had, you know, Jarrell Miller there, 20 wins, 0 losses, 1 draw against Johan Duopai, 37 wins, 4 losses. You know, with Duopai, you know, he kind of like had a couple of wins after his loss to Deontay Wilder. And then he went up ahead and fought Alexander Povetkin in 2016, at the end of 2016. And we know what happened there in reference to that fight, you know, taking place, because, you know, Povetkin was supposed to fight, he was supposed to fight Bermond Stiburne, but then Povetkin got caught with an illegal substance for that particular fight. So Stiburne went on ahead and dipped from that fight, and they ended up finding a replacement, Johan Duopai, and Duopai was taken out in about 6 rounds. You know, then after that, he was, you know, I would say, you know, back in the ring, was able to get a couple of, you know, small fights in there. And then at the end of 2017, he was able to win a minor heavyweight title there before fighting Jarrell Miller. And with Jarrell Miller, you know, being there at 20 wins, 0 losses, and 1 draw, he had a couple of big wins in 2017 against, you know, another title contender, WBC title contender, and Gerald Washington. Was able to stop Gerald Washington, and then was able to stop Maris Rock in his fight that he had November 11th of 2017. So he was looking to continue his unbeaten record. And see where it could go from here if he was able to get this win over Johan Duopai. And, you know, of course, leading into the fight, you know, the big story usually with Jarrell Miller is, of course, with his moniker, Big Baby. And they call him Big Baby because of his, you know, size. He's like there at, you know, 6'4" or so. And yeah, he's pretty much 6'4". I register in at, you know, 6'3", and you know, he's there at 6'4". And you know, he's kind of a big guy there. And at the weigh-in, he's registered at 304.4 pounds, which is the biggest that he has ever been. But he wasn't necessarily, you know, all fat or whatever it is. So he's, you know, really, you know, he's fairly toned. So he could, you know, move and things like that. And he was able to get himself going against Johan Duopa. And he was able to have that a good start against Johan Duopa and continue it for most of the fight. There were, you know, a couple of times where he got tagged a little bit by Duopa, but, you know, nothing that really, you know, stunned him, nothing that really affected him, nothing that really put him in danger of losing the fight. And so he was able to go 12 rounds, beat Johan Duopa, and score a unanimous decision win to stay undefeated and move to 21 wins, 0 losses, and 1 draw, and give Johan Duopa his 5th loss of his professional career. Real quick, I got Eric Cole 813 with us. What's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, Jay? This is Charles Collins from Tampa. Just once again, glad to participate in a great show. Just even speaking on the fight, unfortunately, I didn't get to consume that one. I would definitely have that for a meal sometime this week. But I mean,
will that come with cheeseburgers?
not so much.
that's Miller's thing, man. Cheeseburgers. So I don't know if you were going partake in that as well. But yeah, that's a fight that you'll, you know, kind of like check out to see what Miller does. One thing I would probably summarize with it is that, you know, a few people were kind of like looking at his performance against Johan Duopa in comparison to Deontay Wilder's performance against Duopa. And, you know, Duopa was able to go 11 rounds before getting stopped by Deontay Wilder. But, you know, with Jarrell Miller, it looked like he was able to, you know, pace himself. But one criticism that, you know, a few people were saying was that Miller, you know, even, you know, with him being at 304 pounds, he really doesn't put a lot behind his punches, and he doesn't really put punches together a lot. So it's basically like a 1-2, and then no pause, and then a 1-2, and then another pause. He doesn't really, you know, throw a lot of shots in succession, and he doesn't really seem to sit behind his punches, because if he did, he would be able to do a lot more damage to his opponent there. So he doesn't really necessarily knock guys out. He just, you know, punishes them to a point where, you know, either the referee or the doctor or the trainer stop the fight.
Well, I mean, that's a totally valid point assessment on Big Baby Miller. It's like, I mean, because the same thing, when I think of someone 300 pounds, you're automatically thinking someone of the size of an NFL lineman, whether it be offensive guard or just defensive tackle, something like that. Maybe not necessarily a tackle, but definitely offensive lineman, guard or whatever.
Yeah.
But, and with that said, and with that size, you would think comes a lot of power, a lot of concussive power. But like I said, you just don't necessarily see that in him. And even being that 6'4", 3", whatever you think, me being a physical fitness enthusiast, my thing about it is that the best way he can be? Is that the best condition he can bring to a fight? And even at 300 pounds, why is he not knocking people out? Why does he not have that concussive power that you would think that would come with that natural size that he has? You know, but that's definitely a question. But it's like, should he be a better fighter with better mobility at 275? Maybe not. Or he's just simply comfortable at that weight, not guys and get in shape per se, you know. But I mean, you know, the era we have, like you call them, super heavyweights now. guys.
Mm-hmm.
240 and above. I mean, we look at Joshua, 240, 250, Fury, people like that. But these guys are definitely high in that weight scale. And it's also a wonder, and I certainly will give a compliment to Wilder, for example. Comes in, I think came in his last fight with 220 at that, or something like that. And yeah, he's still able to come in here and hang with these guys and do what he does, you know, despite the weight disparity. Because I think Ortiz weighed in at 238, 240, something like that. And even that Wilder's like, it's not a problem. And I'll give it to him. He actually proves it's not a problem. The weight difference is not a problem. He still competes at a high level. But back to Big Baby Miller, is that the best weight for him? And but like I say, it looks like he's just comfortable and being at that weight to insulate his punch, to punch his hay receive and stuff like that. So that's works for him. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I think the questions that come up in reference to Jarrell Big Baby Miller, in reference to his how he would measure up against the other upper echelon heavyweights that are out there, and that includes the former WBO champion Joseph Parker, that includes Alexander Povetkin, and includes the world champions Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder, is that how is he going to be able to adjust to those that have better skill than the opponents that he's faced? I mean, you have, you know, him there at 300, you know, over 300 pounds or so. And yes, he has said, you know, in the post-fight press conference that he wanted to cut himself down to about, you know, 280 or 275 if he can. But even with that, he still would have issues moving around the ring against opponents that would have a good and consistent jab. And, you know, the consensus is right now that he would not be favored in fights against Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder, even though, you know, Miller right now has the confidence that he believes that he could beat either one of those guys. But he really hasn't dealt with somebody that has the height and the jab that would keep him at bay, or basically keep him, you know, away from, you know, those two guys. That's pretty much what I had on that. But before I continue, I have 646 on the line. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, JR? Just listening to the show, I find it kind of interesting that you said that Jarrell Miller thinks that he can beat both Wilder and Joshua. But when he was asked the question about Wilder and Joshua, he went straight to Joshua, basically saying he could run him out of the ring. I think Miller knows that he don't want that smoke with Deontay Wilder. And I think that's evident, and that's probably the reason why he fled Showtime and went to HBO, because he used to fight on Showtime when they were trying to set up him and Deontay Wilder, was fighting on Wilder's undercard. And then all of a sudden, he goes to HBO. So I find that pretty interesting that he decided to do that when it seemed like a fight with Wilder was close. So I don't know what's going on with that, but I don't think he's going to get either guy. I think they're going to end up fighting each other, and we're going to go from there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, now, in reference to, you know, Miller's comments in about Deontay Wilder, he did speak about him in a post-fight press conference. So I'm not sure. I mean, you were able to, like, kind of, you know, hear what he was saying after or while he was talking with Max Kellerman. But in reference to, you know, the post-fight press conference, he did mention Deontay Wilder's name. Now, you know, a few people have posted the post-fight press conference on YouTube. I haven't really had the time to post mine yet. I will do that tonight before the end of the night. A lot of catching up to do with that. But he's, like I was saying, he's confident. It's just that you know, from the consensus of, you know, those that have watched, you know, Wilder, Joshua, and Jarrell Miller, they just don't feel that Jarrell Miller has anything that would make him have an advantage against either one of those guys. So that's why they favor Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua over Jarrell Miller right there. But, you know, in the meantime, he will be the, you know, the highest ranked contender for the WBA regular championship there. And the other thing that was, like, kind of pointed out in the after the fights, back in the post-fight press conference and in the meetings that they were having down there, is that with Jarrell Miller, he's kind of – he says he's, like, quote-unquote, a free agent in that he isn't, you know, directly affiliated with Eddie Hearn, in that he doesn't, you know, have fights signed under Eddie Hearn, or Eddie Hearn is his promoter. Like, he says he's his own dude. So if there's, like, a fight that he could seek that doesn't really tie himself with Eddie Hearn, he'll do it, you know. But that was just something there that he kind of, like, pointed out in the post-fight press conference there as well, that was kind of, you know, interesting to many because of him being involved in this fight at the Barclays Center and in the previous fight, that was a fight card that was in Uniondale, New York. So I thought that was kind of interesting there that he kind of, like, pointed that out. Yeah, seeing here, pretty much had, like, about 20 or so minutes on the live show here on the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Golan Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. Next up is going through the main and that involved middleweight Daniel Jacobs, former WBA regular middleweight champion, against Maciej Selecki, coming from Warsaw, Poland, undefeated, a guy that, you know, had about 10 KOs and about, like, you know, 23 wins or so, but one of those KO victories did come up against Hugo Centeno Jr., who was the opponent for, you know, for Jermall Charlo, who ended up knocking out Centeno Jr. in one round. But here in this fight with Jacobs and Selecki, I think, you know, one of the things that was kind of interesting in the lead into the fight was, I think you kind of, like, pointed this out here, 646, and how HBO, the HBO commentators interpreted the introduction to Daniel Jacobs. Did you say something about how they kind of summarized it?
I'm trying to remember. I can't really remember what they did. I just know that the way that they played up the fight, it just seemed like a wrestling match with like stars versus jobbers or whatever. It's like there was no respect given to any other guy,
Selecki,
that was the opponent. But it was just
I
don't know what's going on with HBO, to be honest with you.
That's what it was.
Miller's like the third best heavyweight. They're making it seem like Jacobs was a world beater, even though his performance wasn't that great. It was just very interesting, you know.
Very thin. And the thing was, I think you pointed out that they didn't even show the walk in for Johan Duopa.
What happened to the walk in? Like he just appeared in the ring. I was like, where did this guy come from?
When he like appeared out of nowhere, like the Undertaker or something. I mean, I don't know,
man. Like he was hiding in the ring.
Yeah. But, yeah, the thing with Selecki, he did have, you know, a few Polish fans scattered out in the Barclays Center for this particular fight. And he had Daniel Jacobs with his entrance that was, like, you know, very, very eventful, to say the least. So, I mean, this is like a middleweight matchup that, you know, when I was talking with Daniel Jacobs after the press conference on Thursday, he was like saying that, you know, Selecki will probably give him more opportunities to score big punches and, you know, kind of like in the fight early in comparison to Luis Arias, because Arias wasn't really an engaging fighter there in that last fight on November 11, 2017, which, you know, kind of like led to a, you know, blowout decision win for Daniel Jacobs, but, you know, it was like kind of very uneventful. But here against Macy Selecki, oh, he didn't have that. Selecki was out there. He came to fight. You know, he was ready to go. He kind of like showed that in the very first round, catching Jacobs with, you know, a couple of good punches. You know, was able to work the jab a little bit in the first few rounds. And, you know, get a few good shots in. And it took Jacobs a little bit of time to adjust to what Selecki had to do. In the middle rounds, I'd say rounds 4, 5, and 6, Daniel Jacobs started to go to the body, which really affected Selecki. However, he didn't concentrate on the body for most of the rest of the fight, which I kind of felt that, you know, that was something that, he could have, you know, done in order to further weaken Selecki instead of, you know, kind of like either, you know, wait on Selecki to do something or, you know, kind of like just throw jabs and hooks and, you know, come in there with, you know, big right hands. He was able to score well with the left-hand counter. But, you know, like I said, he wasn't consistent with the body attack. And that's, you know, something that I pointed out to his head trainer after the fight. But, you know, even with that, they were able to have a couple of exchanges, get into the 12th round, and then in an exchange in the 12th round, Selecki got caught with a good right hand, bam, and then he went down to the canvas. And, man, and this was, like, pretty much at the beginning of the 12th round, right? So, you know, when I'm, like, covering the thing over there in, like, media row, quote-unquote media row, and I'm, like, trying to put in, like, pictures in from the 11th round, you know, on the laptop and try to do some updates, I'm, like, looking at my laptop, and all of a sudden, man, I see Selecki going down, and he almost went down in the heat. I thought he was going to be out, you know, after that. And, yeah, I missed that punch, but I saw him go down, and I seriously thought he was done. After that punch, but he was able to get up. Jacobs, you know, kind of like, you know, pursued him a little bit, but didn't really kind of concentrate and take his time to finish Selecki off. So it went to the scorecards, and with those scorecards, Jacobs was able to score a unanimous decision win and give Selecki his first professional loss of his career. I'm going to start with you, 646. What was your assessment about this particular fight? And I asked Jacobs if he kind of was surprised a little bit on how Selecki approached him at the beginning of this fight, because, like I was saying before, Jacobs kind of like expected Selecki to be a come-forward style, you know, rock'em sock'em type of fighter. But Selecki kind of like moved in and out of the ring and moved in and out of the pocket a little bit, specifically in those first few rounds. So what did you think about this?
I thought it was a decent fight. A lot of people are making me think the fight was really exciting. I wasn't too excited about the fight. Thought that Jacobs had zero respect for Sulecki's power. So to me, he fought a different kind of fight. Like, I don't know what was up with him. You know, his trainer was giving him advice to step in more and press the action more, because it seemed like when he was doing that, Sulecki seemed a bit outclassed. So I don't know if Jacobs, you know, didn't train hard. Maybe he didn't take this opponent too seriously because he knew that he couldn't hurt him. He probably saw the 10 KOs. He was like, well, this guy can't hurt me. So, you know, it is what it is. Honestly, I haven't been too impressed with Jacobs in his last couple of fights. So I'm starting to wonder if he peaked as a fighter. I know he was telling Max Kellerman that he can go to another level, he can get better. But when you have guys like Sulecki standing across from you, you're supposed to take care of business. You know, say what you want about the Charlos of the world or whether or not you think that their opposition is weak. But when they have someone that they should take care of, they take care of business right away. They get them out of there. And I'm always wary of fighters that don't take care of business and get people out of there. That's why I'm a little wary of Big Baby, and I'm wary of Jacobs, because those fights should not have went 12 rounds. So to me, that's gonna affect my thinking of how they match up against the heavy hitters of the divisions.
Right. Yeah, I think you did have a lot of people that ended up being, you know, skeptical of these fighters there. So, you know, after these performances. So that's something that, you know, we'll have to look into here in their next endeavors, who they'll be able to face next here. Terrell, do you have any assessment on Daniel Jacobs overall?
Yeah, I mean, if anybody funded the press conference, I think, on Thursday, Jacobs suggested that he almost, in a sense, expected to come. Well, he definitely wanted to come out and make a statement to the division. We know that. Now, did he do that? No, he didn't. He didn't necessarily do that. I mean, he was himself. No injuries in training camp. No distractions, things like that. He's fighting the Barclays Center, his home. So, and with that said, you would think that all the stars would have been lined up for him to have an outstanding performance. But that didn't necessarily happen. And you have to consider the fact that Sulecki has had probably a number of fights at 154. Right? And really, just like 646 said, you really want him to come out there and take a business relatively early, in a sense. But, I mean, but the thing about it, Sulecki came out, he definitely has some complexity to his game. He wasn't just your typical straightforward fighter. He offered angles, things like that, and uses jab and uses height as well. And despite him having a lot of fights at 154, he still has good size for the division, you know. But just more to the fight itself, I mean, the main thing, put like this, if Sulecki had more power, it would have been a different fight. But there's so many changes from both sides, where he hit Jacobs clean with those right crosses and the straight rights within the midst of their exchanges. And Jacobs had the same success. But the thing about it, he's already at 160. But the thing about it, if Sulecki had more power, it could have been a different story at the end of the night. But it didn't play out that way. Jacobs got that late knockdown kind of in the sense to seal the deal. And I don't think the fight was ever in jeopardy for Jacobs, but still, like I said, you want to see him come out and back his words up and say, I want to make a statement in the division.
Right.
We may have to, but we may see a fight between him and Charlo, and with Jacobs saying he wants the top fight within the division. That's what he wants. So certainly, he's looking at the top echelon of people, whether it be Reed Castro Golovkin, which is not realistic at this point, because we know where Golovkin is pointed at. The matchup with Baines Matarosan next week, and down the line with Canelo. So Golovkin is locked up. That's not going to happen. So what else is out there in middleweight? Charlo, that's the other really money fight of the division. You know, so.
And the thing about it is, Jacobs, if there was, like, anybody that he wanted to fight next, it wasn't Canelo, it wasn't Golovkin, it wasn't, you know, Billy Joe Saunders, even though, you know, that type of fight may be difficult with, you know, Jacobs being under Eddie Hearn and Saunders being under Frank Warren, Jacobs said, you know, quickly that he wanted Charlotte next. So that's the fight that he's seeking there, because he just, it seems like he wants to just basically shut Charlo up because, you know, Charlo had been, you know, part of the, middleweight division for just two bouts. And, you know, even with that, he was, you know, just able to knock out the two fighters that he fought. But, you know, with Centennial Jr. already losing to Selecki beforehand, and, you know, the other guy he fought, I think it was, who was it, Rubio, that, you know, with that, he just didn't, you know, necessarily impress Jacobs as far as, like, his impact in the middleweight division. So that's the thing that we got from that particular thing right there. So we'll see what happens with Daniel Jacobs here in the near future. But in the meantime, we got about less than 10 minutes left in the live session of the show. Just wanted to touch in the one main event that was happening at the in Philadelphia. And I think this was the WBO super bantamweight title fight, if I'm not mistaken, where you had Jesse Magdaleno defending that WBO title against Isaac Dogbo. And both of those guys came in there undefeated. Magdaleno was 25-0, and Dogbo was there 18-0. And I think a lot of people were, you know, kind of siding with Magdaleno in this particular fight, thinking that he would be able to defeat Dogbo. But Dogbo had other plans right there. And, you know, I was able to see, you know, pretty much the end of this particular fight while I was there at the Barclays Center, and saw that Dogbo was able to pull off the win over there against Magdaleno to win that WBO title and stay undefeated and give Magdaleno to his first professional loss there. So I just wanted to get your reactions to that particular fight. And what did you see from Magdaleno that kind of, like, you know, opened things up for Dogbo to, you know, kind of like take advantage and end up picking up the win?
Well, I tell you what, that was a very enjoyable fight. It's funny because Magdaleno, Debbie had the physical size advantage over Dogbo, but Dogbo is just speed, good power, and frankly speaking, for these smaller classes and stuff like that. And a lot of times we tend to forget about the talent that is downstairs in these lower classes. But Dogbo came out right at Magdaleno. He got that knockdown. He got knocked down in the first round. I'm sure he didn't anticipate that, but when you consider that and then tie it together, that shows you how resilient he was, because he didn't let that just stop him or just deter him from keep going forward with his game plan and things like that. But he showed a lot of good power to control that fight early on. But like I said, the main story, Dogbo got locked down in the first round, and he still kept coming forward, chopping down that tree, going to the body at times, and from that point, start to win exchanges within the fight, you know, and then slowly take control of the fight over. And one good thing about Dogbo, that body work paid off for him. He stepped onto the body with those good, nice right hooks. And it was funny, towards the middle rounds, I think it was round 6, 7, 8, 9, when the pace slowed down a bit, there's a certain exchange that happened between the two where Magdaleno kind of put his head like that, come on, and trying to implore Dogbo to add, I want more. And with a lot of times, a fight, when a fighter does that, it means that they're hurt, right? And so that, to me, was the beginning of the end for Magdaleno. because he really hadn't had any really tough signs of good clean shots by himself. So it was a good fight, though. And so definitely kudos to Dogba, traveling a long way from Ghana, and also at the same time embracing the lineage of Ghana. What's the guy saying that's from Ghana from back in the day? Remind me that name.
Who was it from?
Back in the day.
Who was the other former? Oh, back in the day. oh, goodness.
Nelson.
Not Nelson. Yeah, it could be Azuma Nelson.
But you gotta
yeah, I think that's what it is.
Yeah, but it was a good fight. Good fight. Like I said, just Dogba just kept sticking with it. And slowly, when there was exchanges, take control of that fight, which was rolling in with his hand being raised at the very end. So, good fight.
Yeah, it was a good performance there by Dogba, being able to, you know, go through the early setback and then, you know, still be able to control and take pace of what was going on there in that particular fight against Jesse Magdaleno and end up scoring the TKO victory right there. 646, what's your assessment?
Well, I think Dogba kicked his ass. It was actually, to me, a pretty easy fight for Dogba once he got going. You know, I know you was at the other fight at Barclays, so you probably missed it, but he was able to, he was just winging shots and just cracking Dog and just cracking Magdaleno. It was actually pretty interesting to see because he basically did exactly what he said he was going to do. He said that he didn't think that Magdaleno was going to be able to handle his power. He was very confident in the lead up to the bout. And it seems like once Magdaleno tasted his power and he shook him, Magdaleno never really recovered after that. It's like he was just relentless and was just going to the body, going to the head, just mixing up his attacks. He didn't even jab much. He was just throwing power shot after power shot after power shot. And really, he bullied him around the ring. It was a great performance. I was pleasantly surprised by it because it seems like every time Bob Arum finds an African for one of his guys to fight, they can't take a punch. But it seems like Dogba, I guess they bit off a bit more than they could chew now. So, yeah, I'm actually pretty interested to see what he'll be able to do in the junior featherweight division. You know, you got some decent fighters in there. They were talking about doing a rematch, but I'm not too sure why. I don't think the fight warranted a rematch. I thought the fight was pretty clear who was the better fighter. You know, Magdaleno was making some excuses after the fight, talking about it was the layoff because he did have a year layoff, but I don't think that was really the reason why he got beat, you know. So I wonder if Dogba would fight somebody like maybe like Vargas or Danny Roman or even Moises Flores, you know, somebody like that, somebody of that ilk. Obviously, he's not going to fight Rigo because I don't think Arum and Rigo will be doing any business in the future. So it's like, you know, I wonder what's next for him. Hopefully, he can secure some fights because he's a fighter I'm really interested in seeing again.
Yeah, that's the thing about Dogba. He could, you know, bring a lot of action to a fight, no matter who his opponent is. But I mean, we know the story with Bob Arum and certain fighters in that, you know, once you know a fighter comes in there and basically, you know, takes out a you know, somebody that's like kind of a lot of guy that or a guy that he puts a lot of hype around, then Arum just sets down the guy that beats the guy that had a lot of hype, you know. So I have to see what Dogba is able to do there. But you did bring up a few possible matchups that Dogba could have. But it's just all about, you know, him having the, you know, opportunity to get those fights there. So that's something that, you know, we'll have to watch out for there, because, you know, Dogbo won't, you know, fight the Diego De La Hoyas or other guys that are right there in the WBO, like, you know, Thomas Ward or Cesar Juarez maybe. But, you know, other than that, that's, you know, basically, you know, what's out there for Dogbo to fight as a new WBO super middleweight champion. We should have stepped into the overtime section of the show here for the Boxing Source, and just, you know, have like one thing to basically cover there for it, and that is the continued back and forth talk in reference to the heavyweight fight that's going to be for the Undisputed Heavyweight Championship that seems to have still not been able to be finalized. And it is, you know, whole thing with Anthony Joshua, the IBF, WBO, and WBA Super Heavyweight Champion, and the WBC Heavyweight Champion, Deontay Wilder. And, you know, of course, the big news from this week is that, you know, Deontay Wilder went on a video, posted it on Instagram, and, you know, kind of like said that Anthony Joshua, hey, we got, you know, we got a good little proposition for you, where you could, you know, earn a guarantee of $50 million, and that the money's in the bag, so to speak, and, you know, that kind of, you know, threw a lot of people off. It kind of had a lot of people excited, but it also threw a lot of people off and raised a lot of questions. And as a response to Deontay Wilder's video, you know, Anthony Joshua posted, as replied to Wilder's post, well, let's go, bro. And, you know, Eddie Hearn was saying, well, we're kind of interested, but what do you have? Or what are the specifics? And as a response, the overall response was, well, you can't really get the specifics of this until you agree to it. And that kind of like raised a red flag for Eddie Hearn. And he said, well, hold up. That doesn't sound right when, you know, we had something scheduled for, you know, me to meet with Al Haymon and Luna Bella and Shelly Finkel. And it was, you know, first it was scheduled for Wednesday, and then it got pushed back to Thursday while, you know, even with, you know, Hearn having that press conference over at the Mondrian Park Avenue for the fight at the Barclays Center. And then it was pushed to Friday, and then pretty much on Friday, Shelly Finkel sends an email that says, you know, there's no point of us meeting if there's, you know, nothing going to be basically done. So that whole thing fell apart. And, you know, there was a lot of talk on both sides of the fence. And this is like another video that I haven't really posted in full yet. I did ask Eddie Hearn a question in reference to that, but that was at the tail end of an extended, you know, back and forth with Eddie Hearn and a lot of the quote-unquote mobile journalists that are out there now in the boxing world today. But, you know, the videos out there, I think Fight Hub TV has it. There's like a specific person that was asking a lot of questions in reference to Deontay Wilder, what Deontay Wilder was doing. He was asking those questions to Eddie Hearn. I got to get that particular page in order to find that video. But in the meantime, once I'm done with this show, I will post that video up too. That's the full one where I asked the question there at the end. If you look at Fight Hub TV's video that's out there right now, you might see me off in the cut, off in the corner there behind Radio Raheem here. So you might be able to see me out there before I'm able to post my angle of those particular questions that were asked to Eddie Hearn. But in the meantime, right now we're basically still stuck, and I've said what I've said about it in social media platforms, and what's the overall announcement of the next fight become official. I can't wait until that happens, because it's something that a lot of people on the inside already knew before this whole back and forth thing even started. But I wanted to get a couple of reactions to it. First, I'm going to start with Terrell and then 646. So go right ahead.
Yeah. Once again, the politics, the circus that boxing is on display right now. Just positioning from both sides in regards to getting this fight happening. Well, it's funny, on last week's show, I think it was 646, one of the guys said that, hey, we just want to see the fight. Well, simple as that statement is, it doesn't happen that simple. It's never that simple. And it's really, once again, all about the politics of boxing, A side, B side, where the fight's going to be at, and the bottom line, money. Who gets how much money? Who's going to make the most money for the fight? So, I mean, this week, once again, this is just the sport of boxing on display at its, I don't want to say at its worst at this point, but it's just so funny that the social media posts, the $50 million offer, the email. I saw a video clip this week where TMC Sports interviewed Deontay Wilder at the airport, where he stated, yeah, I sent an email to Eddie Hearn with a $50 million offer. It's on their table now. So at times it just gets so hard to know who to believe, what to believe. There's smoke and mirrors. There's all kind of back and forth. And even what you were talking about earlier with Big Baby Miller. So just 2 months ago, Eddie Hearn himself said that it'll be interest in the event that Joshua B. Parker, and he did, it'll be interesting to bring Joshua over to America to fight someone like Big Baby Miller to grab that exposure of this country. But at the same time, right now we're waiting to see, quote unquote, like you said, James. I'm glad you guys got some good coverage on that, because you just suggested that they already know who they're going to fight next with Joshua, and we pretty much know it's not going to be Wilder. Would it be Povetkin, who's a mandatory for one of the belts, or could it be Big Baby Miller? We don't know. Personally, I know we're going to have some more build-up for this fight for Joshua Wilder. I know that. I mean, of course, I would like to have him right now. We need a little more build-up. And, yeah, and really, I wouldn't be mad if he fought Big Baby Miller over here in the summertime somewhere to grab that exposure of him fighting in this country to help build that pay-per-view. But, like I said, it is so funny just to know what to believe, who to believe, and things like that. Just is boxing.
All right, gotcha. 646, your take on it.
Listen, I just want to know, when are people like you going to stop letting Eddie Hearn lie to the public? You guys are truly letting this man off the hook. You know, I listened to that question you asked him when you were speaking with him, the one that you posted on your Instagram. And he said some very interesting things which directly contradicted out when the offer was first made. First, he claimed when the offer was first made, oh, Deontay Wilder doesn't have $50 million. Well, Eddie Hearn, we know the money is not coming out of the fighter's pocket. It never does. So why are you even saying that? Why saying that to distract the public and confuse the people? Because he was already crafting his excuse. And he was then, in the interview with you, he basically said, oh, I believe that they do have the money for the fight. But then he said something interesting. He said, but I don't like the terms. So before, he was talking about it was just $50 million with no terms, no framework of a deal, no contract. But then when he was speaking to you, he stated, I don't like the terms, which means not only did he get the financial offer, so why couldn't he just give a simple yes or no to Team Wilder, and then they can go from there. We already knew what the terms of the deal was. The terms of the deal was $50 million versus 50% if the fight does over $100 million. The fight will take place between September and the end of the year. It will be the next fight for both guys, and there will be no rematch clause for either guy, and it will be at a venue of Wilder's choosing. The way Eddie Hearn framed it when the offer was first made, he framed it as there were no terms given. Just, well, here's $50 million. Do you want to fight? No, that's not what happened. They offered you a financial offer, and they offered you terms to agree to the fight. Once you accept the terms, we sit down and we hammer out the details of the contract. And people like you who know and understand the boxing business know that this is how many deals for big fights get done. But now, since it's Deontay Wilder, now all of a sudden you and people of your ilk got amnesia. Now all of a sudden Team Wilder's not doing business the right way. That's not how you're supposed to do it. Like, come on. Why are you perpetrating this fraud upon the public? What's going on, man? Just let me know. Is it Deontay Wilder or is it Al Haymon that you hate? Because it's one of them. Because I just don't understand. It's like, I feel like I've been dropped off in like an alternate universe. We know this is how deals get done. Why are we letting Slick Eddie Hearn talk us like to us like we're out of our minds? This is how deals get done. What's the difference now? What's the difference? Talk to me, man.
Well, all right. So let me just first, you know, go through this whole thing here, as you know, in the busy streets of Washington D.C. Now, I don't know how you interpreted what Eddie Hearn's answer was, but you did like kind of iron out what kind of specifics that Deontay Wilder and his party was proposing in reference to that offer. But here's where I see a few roadblocks to this. Number one, if you specify that they had details into this specific offer, why would you not meet with Eddie Hearn in order to see and iron out the details and make that fight happen? If they had that whole thing, they had the details, they had the specifics, then all they had to do was come to Eddie Hearn, meet up with Eddie Hearn, and say, hey, this is it right here. You heard the specifics of the offer. Here it is in paper for you to sign, so you could go ahead and sign it. But they didn't do that. They had Wednesday to do that. Didn't do that. They had Thursday to do that. They didn't do that. They had Friday to do that and didn't do that. So my thing is that if you, first of all, if you are really serious in reference to the specific offer that you are pushing over to Anthony Joshua and Eddie Hearn, and they want to see it, then why not meet with them so they can see it, they can sign it, and then the fight will happen. But that is not the case. That's number one. Now, number two, in reference to the specific question that I asked to Eddie Hearn there at the end, I said, well, don't you find it weird or don't you find it funny that they approach you or send an email to you in reference to an offer that seems kind of lucrative at this time when they couldn't have done it in November, right? Because after November, specifically between November 4th and November 11th, it was Thursday, November 9th, when Eddie Hearn met with Al Haymon and Shelly Finkel. So my thing is, if Al Haymon for money, then why didn't they make that type of proposal on Thursday, November 9th, 2017? That's number one.
The fight wasn't a $100 million fight at that time. You and I both.
And I'm glad that you answered. I'm glad that you answered it that way, because what I was told by multiple multiple columnists and journalists that have been in the game for decades is that right now, this fight does not generate $100 million. It does not. Because neither guy does not pull the worldwide appeal to have a fight for the undisputed championship of the world to generate that type of money. They don't. So even with the pay-per-views, the gate receipts, the promotion, the purse that's being put out, they're not going to be able to have a return of a revenue of $100 million, which is what a lot of people are kind of projecting for this particular fight. But it's
but let me ask you a question
that
about that,
big.
JR.
It's not that big.
A question about that. If they're saying that the fight is not going to generate that much, what the hell does Eddie Hearn care? Josh was going to get his guaranteed $50 million anyway. So what does he care if Deontay Wilder's takes the bath on the fight?
Here's the thing. Here's the thing about that. He doesn't care Joshua gets the guarantee or not. He wants to actually know if there is a guarantee. Because what he explained is that, okay, you say that you have this type of money. All right, so why don't we meet, give us the specifics, and if we agree to it, we sign it, then go ahead. It's on you to find where that money is coming from, whether they raise it or whatever it is. Because my thing is this. If I'm on Eddie Hearn's side, right, gave this type of offer through email, that's number one, through email, right, then I'm going to be like, well, okay, this is going to be a fight where even though my fighter is the A side, is the much more popular fighter, I won't have to fit the bill. Because when me and you discussed it, is that we kind of went at the fight like Eddie Hearn and Matchroom Boxing was going to fit the bill, in that he was going to put in $30 to $40 million for the purse and host it wherever it was going to be hosted, and then hope to get a return in revenue so that he returns with a profit that's big enough for him to be, you know, satisfied, right? But now, with this email and this Instagram offer by Deontay Wilder, they're saying that it's $50 million guaranteed plus 50% of the back-end pay-per-view. So they're like, that's kind of interesting. Let us know more about it. Let's meet up. Let's talk about this. Because that's how business is done. In the room, face-to-face, with promoters, with advisors, and everything like that. We had this thing on social media where somebody posted up a whole little thing about when Floyd Mayweather approached Manny Pacquiao at the Miami Heat game in that January before their fight became official. Well, yeah, they did approach each other, but they didn't talk one-on-one to discuss specifics of the particular fight. There were other people that were involved in order to make that fight happen. And in this case, it's going to be the same way. You're going to see a few people that will make that fight happen. Al Haymon, Eddie Hearn, Steven Espinoza, and possibly Les Moonves. Because if they think it's going to be as lucrative as they say it is, then it's going to need Steven Espinoza to post this thing on Showtime, post it on pay-per-view, and make it big enough to try to generate that back-end revenue that they claim that this particular fight will be. And that's, you know, pretty much my initial details on that. Anybody, like, have any response on that? Because I was going to close out within the next 5 minutes.
Oh, real quick, one question. What can each fighter do from now in order to up the value of a fight between Wilder and Joshua? So basically what I'm saying, can each one fight somebody in the top 10 or a certain person, or the value of the fight to make the public demand for it even more?
No, I don't think it's going to come from fighting anybody. Like I was saying before, Deontay Wilder is fighting Dominic Brazil. Dominic Brazil knows that he's going to be fighting Deontay Wilder. So however, what I've said over the past few weeks is ever since his win against Luis Ortiz, he's had more appearances in shows. He's been affiliated in the entertainment that kind of raises his overall profile in the general public. And if he continues that, then he'll be able to become, you know, more popular within the general public, which is what they need in order to get to a fight to have that type of revenue that they seek. They can't do it with the general crowd that knows about heavyweight boxing. This is not the days of Tyson, Holyfield, Bo, Lewis, George Foreman, Michael Moore, not even, you know, Vitaly Klitschko and Lehman Brewster. It's not even those type of days anymore. So they're going to have to do a little bit more on their side in order to build that overall profile up. I don't see Anthony Joshua fighting Jarrell Miller next. He's going to fight Alexander Povetkin because, you know, at the end of April, it'll be due for the WBA heavyweight championship. So he's going to have to defend that WBA championship against Alexander Povetkin. Once he honors that mandatory, he's clear. He's free and clear from anything from now. If he's able to fight Alexander Povetkin, let's see, he fought at the end of March. So I would say if he's able to fight Povetkin in the summer and then have that fight against Deontay Wilder in October, November, they're going to, you know, sweep aside that whole thing with the IBF mandatory because they really, I mean, I don't think there's anybody rated there yet. So I say they will have that undisputed heavyweight title fight in October or November, pretty much that last weekend of October or that first weekend of November. That's pretty much how I see it. Yeah. Well, with what you were saying?
Just great reporting, man. Appreciate all the work you did this weekend, man. Really did.
Oh, no doubt, my man. No doubt. Just working hard in the whole thing, man. But hey, very soon, man. I'm gonna need to hire some folks, man. I'm gonna need 646, man. I'm gonna need 646 out there. With a cell phone, with a 4K video, and start asking questions, man. You know, get the bread rolling and whatnot, man. Because hey, it looks good, but it's very hard, man. It's very hard. I tell you that, man. So on that note, I'll bring an end to this episode of the Boxing Stores Radio Show. You catch the next show next week, Sunday, May 6th. As we'll assess the, I guess, whatever's left, which is the Tony Bellew-David Haye fight, since, of course, Canelo Golovkin is not happening, and Golovkin's going to be fighting Mauro Rosen, and Oleksandr Usyk got injured, so the undisputed cruiserweight championship fight has been pushed back, too. So there's only going to be a couple fights, fight cards to discuss, and like I was here from 646 a couple of days ago, that card with Golovkin and Mauro Rosen was supposed to have Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez in there, but he couldn't get out of his country, had issues getting permits to get out of the country, so he scrapped out of that fight. And I think they'll have another women's championship fight there as part of the undercard. So that's what's going to be happening on May 5th over in Carson, California, through K2 Promotions. And, of course, Matchroom Sports has the David Haye versus Tony Bellew matchup that's going to be earlier in the day. So we're going to be covering that. But like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I am out. Have a good evening, everyone.
Good job.